Welcome to the Back of the Bullpen podcast, episode 3. I am Jason Wojciechowski in the bedroom in Los Angeles. This is over there. I'm pointing. Matt Corey.
Hi, I'm also in a bedroom, oddly enough.
In Los Angeles?
No, this is in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, well, that's disappointing.
I am not in your bedroom or in any bedroom close by.
that's actually comforting. Yes. So today I think we're going to talk about it tonight. This will be posted Sunday, but we're doing this on Friday night. So forgive us if we don't talk about Friday or Saturday's baseball games. But we will be talking about Manny Acta as a sort of intro to a larger conversation, hopefully, about managers. We'll be talking about the American League playoffs, mainly because nobody has actually clinched any spot yet as of this Friday night before the games are over. And we will be talking about whether we're going to root for the Orioles as an underdog presumably in the playoffs, since it looks very likely that they'll make it, much as I just said nobody's clinched. So we are off. We'll start with Manny Acta. And Manny Acta was kind of your pet topic. So what do you think about Manny Acta being fired?
Well, I was going to say, he is a guy who has been sort of universally lauded in sabermetric circles as a guy who, pays attention to stats analysis and you know, incorporates that into his managerial decisions. And yet he has this horrific record as a manager. There's obviously, I guess manager wins are probably up there with pitcher wins as a, you know, when you're talking about lousy ways to define the job that someone has done. I find it kind of surprising that Acta has had the axe fallen on him in Cleveland and also in Washington. And there seems to be, two things. One is, he is a guy that people talk up for both the sort of the sabermetric aspect, in our little corner of the internet, that's a big thing. But I don't know that it's a huge thing in general. But the thing that he gets talked up for, and Ben Lindbergh pointed this out at Baseball Prospectus on Friday, is that he gets talked up for being a great motivator of men and sort of the perfect guy, quote unquote, to manage a baseball team full of younger players. And he's had two shots at managing teams with younger players. And it has been pretty similar both times. He started with the Nationals in 2007, and he got a Manager of the Year vote. He finished fifth in that category. In 2008 with the Nationals, he the team was really bad. They finished 59 wins. And he was fired in the middle of the 2009 season after the team sort of fell apart. And he was replaced by Jim Riggleman, who is very funny to me, but that's another topic. Then he was hired by the Indians in 2010. And in 2011, he got a Manager of the Year vote. He finished fourth. And in 2012, the team tanked on him, and he was fired. So I guess, Jason, this is a part of the eternal question, which is how much impact does a manager have on a team? And I started writing this into our little Google document that we share, where we keep notes for the podcast. Anyway, so I started writing how much effect do managers have on their teams? And you quickly wrote none in capital letters.
Yeah. And that's a little bit of a parody of, the old sabermetric position. Although, the stat nerd position is kind of weird because we simultaneously yell and scream a lot about things that don't actually matter that much, like batting orders. And we get really mad when managers put a fast guy who can't get on base batting first. But then we, you know, I don't know, maybe it's just two different sets of Wii. But then there's the other aspect where it's like, well, they fired the manager and it was just a scapegoat. I think what you said about he's had two shots at teams with young players and chances to motivate them. I think he's also had zero shots at teams with good players.
If you look at the
roster, and I'm looking at the pitching side of the roster for the Indians today, or it's not today, well, today, and their best pitcher is Vinny Pastano, and their second best pitcher is Chris Perez. And I'm ordering best by, WARP, the Baseball Prospectus version of WAR, and or wins above replacement. And, there are just no good starting pitchers on this team. One pitcher has thrown over 200 innings, and he has a ERA over 5. Then there's Ubaldo, who's thrown 175, but he has an ERA of 5.5. So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, there's nobody good enough to replace these awful pitchers, and so they end up throwing all these innings.
Well, if I can interrupt you, there's a chicken or the egg argument here, because now I don't think it's fair to put all of that on ACTA or anybody's feet or head is the word. You could put it at his feet. You could put it anywhere, really. His shoulders. Throw it at his back when he's not looking.
Put it in his pocket.
Yeah. If it's really heavy, it'll just break right through, right down to his pants. But I don't think it's fair to do that. But at the same time, you know, managers are supposed to get the best out of their players, not the worst. And you know, Jimenez has sort of fallen apart since he came to Cleveland. Now there was some analysis that said that. You know, he wasn't as good as he, you know, was in Colorado. And there was reason to believe that he wasn't quite the guy that they thought they were getting necessarily, or at least the guy that he was when he got on the airplane from Colorado, to fly to Cleveland. But, I think he's got almost a 7-run ERA this year. I mean, it's in the sixes, I believe. And
he's come down. He's about 5.5.
Is he 5.5 now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is like an acceptable ERA in Colorado in 2003, but in no other run environment is that okay for a supposedly good starting pitcher.
Exactly.
He also has 17 losses. Speaking of wins and losses, that's crazy. That's a lot of losses.
Well, the team is really. I mean, again, they've just totally fallen apart. So I'm sort of that. Well, let me bring in another sort of partial topic into this larger discussion, and that is Terry Francona, who is rumored to be interested in the Indians job. And you know, Francona is a guy who managed with the Phillies in the late 90s, and he had just an atrocious team to manage, especially you know, pitching wise, but. And you know, they finished badly every single time, and he was finally fired in the fourth year there, or after the fourth year, when the team finished 65-97, and then of course 3 years later he was hired by the Red Sox and won two World Series and blah 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 blah. A sort of side note though, in 1997, Francona's Phillies finished 68-94. Fifth place in the NL East. And Francona finished sixth in the Manager of the Year, the National League Manager of the Year. Now, at that time, I believe 13 teams in the National League. I mean, how deep does the Manager of the Year voting go?
Everybody gets a vote. Well, I think that's an illustration of the randomness of the Manager of the Year voting, because nobody really knows what the standard is. The standard that's kind of come to be is, what do we expect this team to do? If they overachieve, they get the Manager of the Year award,
right.
Which, you know, this year maybe points to like Bob Melvin in the American League, perhaps, because the A's were, quote unquote, not supposed to do this, or not Davey Johnson, whoever the manager in Baltimore is. Davey Johnson was the manager in Baltimore. And then
I'm blanking on it, too.
Showalter. I'm sorry. I knew it was an old line sort of second round guy, but yeah. So that's, you know, those are, you're going to get some sixth place votes for a sixth place finish for, I don't know, Joe Maddon, and who's not bad, who's good, but, and you'll get probably Mike Socha will get a vote or two and get fired. So that'll always be fun. But yeah, the Manager of the Year voting is kind of an interesting window on which to view the fact that we don't know how to evaluate managers or what they do. And not to steal the last word, but we have come up to a time that I think is a good sort of segment ending time.
Can I make one last point?
No, I have last word. Yes, please do make the last point. It's actually a better way to do it. I will say, how about the last word on the point? What? do you have any last words on the topic before we move to our advertiser break, Mr. Matt?
Yes, one more. Looking at you know, ACTA as a guy who has been lauded as all these good things and then has failed, or at least his team has failed, and then looking at Francona, a guy who started off with this awful team and failed, or at least, again, his team failed, and then hired by the Red Sox, a team with a lot of talent, and the team had a lot of success, and Francona got lauded for that success, rightly or wrongly, whatever. And now Francona is looking at taking over, potentially, ACTA's awful team, the team that basically got him fired. So I guess if anyone ought to know that being a good manager first and foremost requires having a good team already there, it ought to be Terry Francona. I don't know why he's interested in this job. Anyway, that's my last word on this topic.
Oh, that's a very good last word. So let's move into the commercial breaks. Our podcast is struggling because we've gone down to two advertisers from our usual four. So we may be looking to hire an advertising consultant of some sort to go out and really work for us here. But one of our sponsors is very prominent. We are being sponsored this week by Nate Silver's new book, The Signal and the Noise. They've instructed me to sell this with the tagline "You wish."
And our other sponsor is Play Furniture Magazine. It's not just the magazine with pictures of sexy and naked furniture. It's also got great articles and exclusive interviews with some of the hottest furniture around.
That is an excellent sponsor break. Well done, Matt. So let's move to the other topic, which is the American League playoff scene. And I think maybe the best way to do this is to go through fairly systematically. And let's just talk briefly, I guess, because we want to cover the whole league in 8 to 10 minutes. So let's start with the East. Yankees currently, as we're recording this, are half a game up on Baltimore. That half is in the loss column. So there's sort of a Yankees control their fate kind of situation. Who do you have in the East, Yankees or Baltimore?
I don't think you can reasonably look at the rosters and conclude that the Orioles are a better team. I mean, the point has been made before, but I will point it out yet again by asking this simple question. If the Orioles were in the World Series right now, who would be the starting pitcher in Game 1? I guess Waylon Chen, maybe?
I think it's Jim Palmer. Isn't it Jim Palmer?
it's weird how the Orioles have done this. And I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting and probably wrong analysis published on this team, quite some of it by me, in the coming months. But the Orioles are up, I guess, three games, as I'm looking at the standings now, up three games on the Angels, and there are five games left, I believe. So you have to assume that the Orioles are going to be one of the wild cards, at least.
Yeah. But you're taking the Yankees to hold that lead as the Eastern. They're not gonna, I guess, because this year it actually matters. You know, whoever gets the wild card has to play that one game coin flip game, whereas the Eastern winner gets to go straight to the real playoffs.
And is there a team that is going to be less hurt by losing their first pitcher than the Orioles?
That's true, but they have to win that game. of course, on the other hand, all they have to do is get two extra innings and they will win. I do want to note, though, that the Orioles actually have a positive run differential at this point. They're sitting at plus +7, which doesn't sound like much for a playoff team, but they were, what, 60 under at the All-Star break, something like that, which means they're like plus +60 in the second half.
They have changed their roster a lot since the first you know, couple months of the season by adding a lot of different guys. I don't have a list in front of me, but you know, Mikado obviously has played right. a pretty competent third base, and et cetera, et cetera. They had a guy come back from injury. I forget who.
Well, and they added Tomy kind of off the bench.
Yeah, the Orioles are a different team, I think, on the field now than they were before. So that plays to their advantage. However, they had a minus run differential coming into Friday's game where they were able to face Aaron Cook, who gave up 6 runs in an inning.
Yeah. I mean, they're still, you know, right around zero for the season. You know, they're plus 7 now. They weren't plus 7 before. But it's still something, I think, that zero or right around zero is a long ways from where they were, which tells you that this team, and I mean, for context, the top differential in the American League is plus 114, and that's Texas. So divide that in half, that's about plus 60, which is about what the Orioles have been in the second half. So, you know, they played like a good team in the second half. But I think just to put my 2 cents in terms of who's going to win the East, I do think the Yankees will probably pull it out. I think Baltimore will have to go into that wild card. But let's real quick, let's try to get these other divisions in there. Detroit and Chicago. I participated in ESPN's triple play a couple of days ago when Detroit and Chicago were tied. Now Detroit is up 2 on Chicago. With let's see, 6-6 to play. So I took Detroit then, and I took Detroit to not go down to the last game, mainly because of the schedule. Detroit has all Kansas City and Minnesota. Chicago has games against Tampa that they have to deal with. So I don't know if you agree with that, disagree.
I'm going to be picking the better team most of the time. and I think that's the Tigers. Max Scherzer has an arm injury of some kind, shoulder injury.
Did that come out today? I missed that. That's unfortunate.
That may be a couple days ago even. I'll have to look it up and see what the story is there. But I remember reading that. I think that even, you know, even if they don't have Scherzer, with, you know, they've got Verlander in a short series, that's a pretty big thing.
Right.
They also have some pretty good hitters on that team. Not that the White Sox don't. I guess the thing, another thing to look at is how the teams have done recently. And the White Sox have played really badly, and the Tigers have played fine.
Right. This was, you know, if you look at the last 10 column, you got the Tigers at 7-3 and the White Sox at 2-8. This was a whole different race just 10 games ago. Yeah. It was, you know, Chicago looked like they weren't up, you know, huge. They weren't up dominatingly, but they were up. They were in a position where everybody was like, wow, the White Sox really could be in this. And the Tigers are not close enough to the wild card where anybody thought that they would make the wild card. And so it was very recently a situation where the Tigers were going to miss the playoffs entirely after signing Prince Fielder for $200 million. But now that looks like it's different. On the other hand, you know, given how things changed over the last 10 days, it's very easy to see them change again over the next week. But let's move to the West. Texas. Max Scherzer.
Right. Yeah, Scherzer. He's got a shoulder issue, and he's 50-50 to make his next start. So who the heck knows?
That's problematic, particularly given how well he's pitched almost as well as Verlander this year, particularly in the second half, I think. So that's a real problem for them, especially in. I mean, it's less of a problem than for other teams because they do have Verlander, they have Anibal Sanchez, and they have who's their other actual good pitcher? Besides, because Porcello is not actually that good.
Doug Fister,
right.
Who Doug Fister, the amazing strikeout artist.
9 in a row. How did that happen? Doug Fister. But, okay, so that's the Central. It sounds like we're both on board for Detroit, and Chicago has just played themselves right out of this. Texas is up 4 on Oakland right now, and they play head-to-head is the thing. After the Leafs play 3 against other teams, the A's have the Mariners. I don't remember who Texas has. Probably the Angels, in fact. And then then they've got the final 3. So if the A's were to, if Texas were to lose a little bit and the A's were to pick it up, they could go into that final series with a shot at the West. But personally, I don't see it. 4 games with 6 to play is a lot, even with 3.
That's a really, Yeah, that's a really hard one to deal with. And I don't know, those teams are probably more evenly matched than I'd like to put, like to think about in my head.
I think they were for about 3 weeks. I think there was when Brett Anderson was not hurt, I think the A's were suddenly a very, very dangerous team. With Brett Anderson hurt, and who knows quite how hurt with his oblique injury, I think the A's may have some trouble because their bullpen is very strong at the top with Grant Balfour and Ryan Cook and Jerry Blevins. It's not necessarily incredibly deep. They have some good pitchers, but not like, you know, it's not like a 1-6 bullpen. Where you're just afraid of all of them. And this whole five rookie rotation means that bullpen is going to get worked. And that could be a real problem over the next six games. That could be a little bit of a problem, even if they get into the playoffs. But let's do the wild card real quick because the segment is running out and my computer's going to buzz at me. It won't. But so Baltimore is kind of in the, I don't know, I hate the phrase, but the catbird seat for the wild card. They are in order for them to fall out of the wild card entirely. The third place team, Tampa Bay, is 3.5 games behind Baltimore. So that's a long distance to fall in six games. The A's would be the other wild card right now. They're two up. They're a game and a half behind Baltimore, and they're two up on. So they're two up on Tampa and the Angels. The White Sox are technically still in it with six to play, but that's not going to happen. So it's really four teams. Tampa and LA are two behind the A's, and then there's another game and a half with Baltimore.
Right.
So do you see Baltimore and Oakland, or do you see Tampa and LA sneaking back in?
I mean, I hate to be no fun, but I think the Orioles and the A's, shockingly, are probably the best bets, but that said, if I had to pick a team to sneak in there, it wouldn't be the Angels. It would be the Rays, who have been, to use a term I hate, firing on all cylinders recently and playing really good ball, actually, to make up for some lousy ball they played sort of middle of the season.
They're just a good team. You know, run differential or whatever, they are they have the second best run differential in the American League.
And right now they've won eight in a row.
Yeah.
So that may change by the time this podcast comes out. quick question for you, Jason. If you look at all these teams, and just for the sake of argument, include the Angels and the Rays in this, if you had to pick a team out of there, I mean, I would be tempted to go with Tampa or Texas. I feel like this is a really weak field with a lot of teams that have a lot of big weaknesses.
Pick a team out of there to what?
To go to the World Series.
Oh,
you know,
actually,
like
that's the thing. Yeah, if Tampa, there are a lot of ways in which Tampa does seem like the best team in the league. Texas, particularly now, you know, once Colby Lewis went down, they're kind of a one pitcher team. I mean, there's Matt Harrison, but I don't think he's as good as he's pitched. So they've really got Darvish and not that much else. We're all still waiting for Derek Holland to actually become a good pitcher. That's kind of problematic for them to not have much starting pitching in the playoffs. And there's, you know, and the Rays certainly have plenty of that. The Yankees also have that starting pitching problem. They've got Sabathia and they've got Kuroda, which is a nice second guy. That's the thing. The Yankees do have two good starting pitchers who will pitch four times or five times maybe in a seven game series. So that might be enough.
Sabathia has been kind of up and down since coming back from that injury. He's had a couple really good starts, but he's also had some kind of poor ones. Kuroda has been pretty, I think he's had a pretty amazing second half. And Phil Hughes, he's pretty good when he faces the Red Sox, and beyond that,
I think the real answer for who's going to come out of the American League is obvious. It's the team of destiny. It is the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles are going to the World Series, and there's just nothing we can do about it. Although that's a good segue.
It is perfect.
We have a segment break before we can really segue. so Matt, what did you do this week, or what are you going to do this weekend?
Yeah, I have done nothing this week, but tomorrow I am heading out to Hood River in the Columbia River Gorge. Tomorrow being Saturday, so it'll be yesterday by the time you hear this. I will be sampling some of the finest beers from Oregon and Washington. And there is a thing out here which I'm not sure how widespread it is, but it's called fresh hop beer. And the idea is that you pick the hops right off the vine and toss them into the kettle. And I have to say, Jason, it is wonderful. And it's an entire festival filled with not every single beer is that way, but I'd say 60-70% of it is. A lot of the beer is brewed just for that festival. So being kind of a beer dork, I'm psyched. I'll be driving out there and drinking some beer and then sitting down and having a nice headache for the rest of the day. So that's what I'm doing.
You'll be driving back?
It remains to be seen if I will be driving back. Someone will be driving back, and that person will be sober, whoever that is. So
that's good news. I'm glad we're recording the podcast today, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be dead. Death. Yay, hilarious. Jason, what did you do this week?
I turned 31 this week, so fuck everything.
Happy birthday, Jason.
Yay, happy birthday. Yeah, that's really the only notable thing. Like I said, the segue was very good. The Orioles, on a less analytical topic, I know you have complicated feelings about the Orioles given what happened last year. So that makes the question very interesting of, will you be rooting for them in the playoffs and to get to the playoffs, more importantly, but it looks they have a very strong chance of getting there. Will you be rooting for them in there because they are, if not for last year, they're the kind of team that a lot of people would want to root for as the underdog, as the, you know, the team that came out of nowhere, the team that in certain senses has no business being there. The team that has just been bad for so long that you kind of want to root for people, you know, to feel happy for the people from Baltimore who've just had a terrible team for so many years that, you know, how could you not want to?
I remember in 2004 how everyone kind of jumped on the Red Sox bandwagon, and I don't mean that in any type of derisive way. It felt to me like an entire country wanted the Red Sox to win. It was pretty neat to be, you know, sort of a part of all that in some sense as a fan, obviously. The Orioles have starting on Friday morning, Baseball Prospectus gave them an 84% chance to make the playoffs, and they beat the crap out of the Red Sox today. So that number is going to go up. I'm a guy, I think like a lot of people, I'm predisposed to rooting for the underdog. You know, after what the Orioles did to the Red Sox last year, I could easily say screw them. But I don't necessarily, I think after the initial anger wore off, I don't necessarily view it that way. I think it's more like what the Red Sox did to themselves. I mean, the Orioles were on the field playing a baseball game against a team, and they were supposed to win it. And credit goes to them; they worked hard and they succeeded. And the Red Sox were in the same position and failed. I think I'm going to be rooting for the Orioles. I mean, one other quick point: one thing that that I find myself also rooting for in the playoffs, especially in the baseball playoffs, where you've got this incredibly long regular season and then these really short playoff series, generally speaking, I like the best team to win. I like excellence to be rewarded. And I find it pretty irritating when crappy teams like the 2006 Cardinals sort of fall through the cracks and end up winning the World Series. That team, that 2006 Cardinal team, still really irks me to this day. So it's weird. I think I'll be rooting for the Orioles for some of the reasons that we talked about earlier, you know, I don't think that they are necessarily their run differential. That said, I also don't expect them to do much in the playoffs. It wouldn't shock me if they were one and done in the coin flip game. And I would expect that if they did make it through the coin flip game, that they would lose to whoever they played next. But, you know, I certainly didn't expect them to get this far. How about you, Jason? Are you rooting for the destiny that is, you know, Sabermetrics, or are you rooting for the underdog?
Well, the nice thing about this situation, being an A's fan, not the nice thing, I guess, but being an A's fan, the odds seem very good at this point that it'll be A's Orioles in that coin flip game. So if the A's win, then I don't have to ask whether to root for the Orioles because they won't be in the playoffs. If the Orioles win, then they're the team that knocked my team out and I won't root for them. So it'll be relatively uncomplicated. It'll be harder if the Orioles actually win the East, or if the A's don't make the playoffs at all. And so the, you know, there's no sort of A's question involved in this. Yeah. If the Orioles win the East, and the A's are playing, well, I guess how would that work out? If the A's are the wild card team and they get past, they would play play the Rangers most likely, because the Rangers are going to probably end up with the best record. So they'll get the right to play the wild card team. So yeah, would I root for the Orioles over, say, the Tigers? I think I would. I don't really like the Tigers. I don't really, you know, the Tigers don't really appeal to me in any particular way. I like Prince Fielder well enough, but I don't have any strong attachment to him.
He told me he likes you a lot.
I've heard that, but it's kind of an unrequited thing with us. So yeah, I think, I mean, as a thing, I guess you sort of look at the different matchups, like Orioles over Yankees. Yes, of course, I root against the Yankees. Everybody does. Orioles over Tigers. Yeah, probably, because the Tigers, you know, whatever. Orioles over, say, the White Sox. I don't like Hawk Harrelson, so I'll root for the Orioles. Orioles over Rangers. I don't know. I have this weird, like, positive vibe toward the Rangers, despite them being division rival of the A's, because I don't know. I like Ian Kinsler. I like Josh Hamilton. I feel bad for Josh Hamilton. I don't know if you saw the other night. The A's just hit, like, three balls at him that he completely biffed. I don't know what was wrong. His eyes were bothering him or something, because he just missed these balls.
I think he literally did have an eye problem.
Yeah. And I know he's had it in the past, and I don't remember what the outcome of, you know, after that, the aftermath of that was. But yeah, no, it's, but in any case, and I like Darvish. Darvish is a lot of fun to watch. So, Orioles Rangers might be the one that makes me the most conflicted, assuming no involvement of the A's.
That's probably the biggest mismatch too.
Right. So that's the best team, the sort of clear best team, the all along best team in the American League, against the team that's not even supposed, against the team that is supposed to have Toronto's record.
Yeah, exactly. A quick point about the wild card. As I'm looking at the scoreboard right now, the Angels are beating Texas 7-2 in the eighth inning, and the Rays are losing to the White Sox 3-1 in the seventh. So if that holds, the Rays will fall a game behind, and the Angels will have a clear shot at, will, you know, be the next team in line for the wild card. So that gives them a much better chance, considering that the small amount of games left. So I have to change based on this. I have to change what I said before to the Angels. I don't think I think that one game is a huge swing. That's a really hard thing to make up.
Well, I know it's 7-2, Angels over Rangers. But never, never, never underestimate the ability of the Angels bullpen to completely blow it. They've shown true. A remarkable facility for that in the last couple of weeks or months or whatever it was.
Well, we should probably stay away from, which I think you and I have both failed at today, from talking about the specifics of the games, because by the time people listen to this, it's going to be...
No, it's time travel. We are playing with the fourth dimension here. It's a... It's physics that's beyond the understanding of the people, but we're giving them an introduction to it and helping them learn it and understand it. It's a public service that we're providing.
Excellent. That's nice of us.
It is nice of us. I think that was a pretty good. I think a public service is a good way to end it. So unless you have any final words.
No. I think by the time you listen to this, I'll have a horrible hangover. And we look forward to talking about the playoffs and all that sort of stuff next week.
Awesome. Episode 3 in the can. Nice to talk to you, Matt.
Take care, Jason.